Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 137 of NerdPod Generations. As always, I am one of your illustrious hosts, Steve Taylor, along with the lovely Al Jetsam. Hello, sir.
Hello, friends and enemies.
It's been a week, buddy.
Oh my God, has it been a week?
It's been a week. Jesus, I gotta say, though, I've ingested more content this week, mainly over the last 2 days,
yeah,
than I have in a lot of previous weeks.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
I'm there with you. There was a definite push in my mind that I was like, you know what, instead of being on YouTube, I'm going to go back and visit some things I haven't checked out in a while.
Yeah.
And we're going to spend a little time doing this.
And it makes it nice.
Yeah, yeah, it makes a nice change up.
So, folks, episode 137, meaning the 136 previous episodes, which are all gold, and you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Make sure to also go to YouTube.com. And if you want to just get all of the goodness into one picture, go to NerdPodGen. That is NerdPodGen.com, our actual website, which has links to everything, including Al's personal website on
JetsamStudios.work under the Bronx Division tab.
Thank you so much. And it's got some of my works, and it's got links to all of our stuff for show, for Spotify, for YouTube. Make sure if you go to one of those sites to like and subscribe. And we do have a contact page on our website, so you can contact us, let us know what you think about the show, give us topics you might want us to cover, maybe movies we haven't thought about that you would like us to watch and kind of give our impression on. We're up for anything.
All the things. It's yes. Alive. It's yes. Alive.
I mean, we have no problem finding content.
No.
But
we can manufacture content, yes, if we need to.
I mean, there's a lot coming out. There's even a, I know this might not be your gig, but my son's dying to see it. There's the new Knuckles TV show on Paramount Plus.
I haven't watched any of the Sonic movies yet, and I am thrilled.
See, the Sonic movies, I gotta admit, are fun. They're not good movies. They're okay movies. The second one leaned more on the humans, which is dumb because no one gives a shit about the humans.
This is exactly my point, though. Why are the humans there in the first place? Like, if it took place in Sonic's reality, which does canonically have humans, as far as I know, from what I've seen, why the fuck are we doing this 90s-ass plot where Sonic comes to our world?
Yeah.
And has to deal with problems in
I gotta say, the first one, the humans actually were fun, and they kind of played a role. Where the second one, they were too much of the story, and that kind of brought it down. But I do love Idris Elba as Knuckles, mm-hmm, and so I'm very excited to see the TV show just because of that.
I'm just saying, in the same way that we had the Snyder Cut, what? I think it's time to release the ugly Sonic cut.
If you're they kind of did in Rescue Rangers.
But I want just Sonic as they imagined it to be.
Oh, there's no way that still exists.
As they envisioned it once upon a time.
There's no way that still
they
exists.
They burned that.
But I do give them credit for letting Chip and Dale parody it.
Yeah, well,
because
they let them parody it in the most big, kind of like Disney saying fuck you to everybody else who's tried to parody them,
yes,
for decades. Disney turned around and was like, fair play. You've been suing people for decades, yeah, over this kind of use, but you're going to come around, oh, it's parody, it's a parody. Sorry. This is editorializing.
Yeah, it is editorial. But anyways, I got to say, I'm very excited about the show this week, folks. I'm not going to say everything we're going to go over, because the second thing we may or may not hit, but the big thing we are going to hit is the first 7 episodes, which is that the whole season?
No, I think there's 2 more episodes.
There's 2 more episodes of X-Men 97. We've watched the first 7, yeah, that are out.
Yes.
And we'll let you know what we think about that. But we do start every episode with what have we been watching, playing, reading. Do you want me to go first or do you want to hit it?
I'll defer.
Okay. So a couple things that you're going to talk about, it's kind of a joint thing. So the one thing with me that has been suffered is the MCU journey that my son and I are on.
We need a name for this segment. It's Ethan Walks the MCU, Steve's Rejourneys.
It's grown. That's what it is, grown. Because as we're getting closer to Infinity War, I'm starting to see the cracks in the armor. And then after Infinity War is when it goes precipitously downhill, because once again, Endgame, I'm not a huge fan of. I appreciate it. But then it's just downhill. So I know I'm getting to that, let's call it the Star Wars prequel part, where I'm like, yeah, I know I'm going to have to watch this.
The breaking point.
It's the breaking point. But yeah, we actually watched 2 movies, Doctor Strange and Black Panther. Doctor Strange, I actually enjoyed more than I remembered. It's not perfect, once again. There are issues with it. I really love Mads Mikkelsen, and I love Tilda Swinton. And I thought they both really were excellent in this. I know you gotta have a love. You gotta have a love interest. The Rachel McAdams thing was kind of like a throwaway. Like it wasn't even.
This is a big issue for me. Is that they push so hard for this relationship.
Yeah.
And I just never buy it.
No.
I just never buy that this is the one thing on earth that Steven truly loves.
Yeah.
Is Christine.
No, it's himself. It was in the comics.
He's like the greatest narcissist of all time.
Yeah, he is. He is like Tony Stark, and that's why I love in Infinity War when they're kind of bashing because they are both insane narcissists.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you know, and it really felt so unnecessary in this movie. It's like you already have enough stakes and enough, like the focus on him just getting his life back is enough. You don't necessarily have to have the love interest part of it.
Yeah.
Especially because I like Rachel McAdams and she was so underutilized in this movie. Like it's like,
yeah.
Once again, it was Marvel not knowing how to write female characters where it's like.
There's so many characters like that that fall into that gap because you have, what's his name? Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yeah.
Who plays the rival doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great. If you've watched him, you've seen him in Shape of Water. You've seen him in Call Me By Your Name. There was one Oscar season where he was just in all the movies. Every single movie, he was somewhere in there.
And Boardwalk Empire, he was a major character in that show.
And he's here doing nothing.
No. He's actually this, and they even say it, Rachel McAdams says it, he's a brilliant surgeon, just not as good as Doctor Strange. And they turn him into a joke when he's getting stuff out of the vending machine, and then Doctor Strange's spirit goes through it and knocks more stuff, and he goes to take it. It's like, it's dude, nothing. This guy's like one of the best surgeons in New York City. He's rich as hell, and you're going to make him run after free chips?
Well, and he's an incredibly good character actor on top of it. So, like, what's the... I don't understand.
Oh, it was...
But, like,
this
was my issue with Mads as well. Mads, for as good as he might be in that role, that is not a role worthy of Mads Mikkelsen.
No.
This is a nothing burger.
I agree.
Should have been... You could have easily done the mindless ones for this.
Yeah.
Which are... aptly named, and they are just the servants of Dormammu.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, like I've seen this done in an anime. This is always the thing that I come back to. There is a animated Doctor Strange movie from the early to mid 2000s.
I remember that one.
It's essentially the exact same story done 10 times better.
Yeah.
And it gets rid of all the stupid fat and the garbage and the stuff that immediately disables you from taking it seriously. The Wi-Fi password, the fucking cape, the joke about, oh, his name is Strange. And all the they go back to that well so many times. Mm. And then on top of all of this, this is your interpretation of Dormammu, which then everybody falls in love with. That's what really pisses me off about some of the MCU things is that... You have these terrible renditions of characters, and then everybody's like, oh, but Dormammu, I've come to bargain. Yeah, you know what? You know what I would have liked to have seen? I would have liked to have seen a version of Dormammu who has an eighth of the power that he has in the comic books, because that still would just shatter the reality that you've given us. This is so dumb.
And that was another thing, is the villains, and like, once again, I love Mads Mikkelsen. When he was on screen, he was great. He wasn't on screen nearly enough. And Dormammu wasn't on screen nearly enough.
Dormammu was a MacGuffin that turned into a nothing twist.
Yes.
And that's it. And that's Dormammu. And if you didn't know, you would think, oh, Dormammu, he can't tell time. Mm. He doesn't know what time is. And I'm just sitting here like, I'm begging you, watch just like three episodes. There's three episodes that have Dormammu in them of the Spider-Man, the animated series from the 90s.
Mm.
And you will see a fraction of what Dormammu should be.
Mm.
And how this is just a terrible version of the character. Like an awful, you want to talk about punts? This is like punting at the opponent's 30-yard line.
Mm.
You might as well just kick a field goal. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, it was, like I said, it's not a perfect movie by far.
Mm-hmm.
I think, once again, I think I'm enjoying some of these movies more, like Thor the Dark World, because I now have the comparison of what's come after Endgame.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck. I mean, Thor is like an Oscar contender compared to some of the shit. Not Thor, Doctor Strange, compared to some of the shit that's come out.
Yeah. Well, Thor, the first Thor, is artistically much more interesting than...
Which Kenneth Branagh is a director.
This is exactly what I'm getting at. He's a more interesting director who is given more leeway with the script. They basically said, do a Shakespeare superhero movie. And he was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And he makes it interesting to look at, and admittedly needs to have the light recranked on the color correction, because Lord knows you can't see a goddamn thing in that movie. But now it's just everything is the same cookie cutter nonsense. Just like chill the dough, roll it out, press out the characters, pop them out, put them in the oven. New Marvel movie. And I was like, this is bullshit, man.
Well, and that's going to lead me into Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Black Panther, and this is the first time I've watched it in quite a while. It was the first of all of the Marvel movies that really leaned into the, what you just said, the dough rollout, follow this line.
Mm-hmm.
And it did it to a horrible extent. Like, I once again, I like the movie. I like the costume design. I like the cultural look of it. This movie, A, in the beginning, the scene where he jumps out of the, let's say, helicarrier thing and fights to
get Nakia
back, is so dark. You can't see what's going on.
Yeah, I do remember.
And like, even Ethan's like, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. It's like, I know. That was, and there were a couple fight scenes in this movie that it was so dark.
Yeah.
You couldn't see what's going on. It's like your main character dresses in complete blackness and you're going to have him in a fight scene. I don't know where he is. It looks like they're fighting a ghost.
And that's a problem that will come back again later on.
Yes.
At the end of the movie. But like, also, just the thing that drives me crazy is that too many Marvel movies have this problem.
Yes.
Especially knowing that they have a specific color correction grade that they use for all the movies. That is in some ways what helps tie the universe together, is that everything is kind of on the same palette. But you look at this and you're just like, you chose this.
Yeah.
You chose to crank it to this level. This is not okay. Yeah. I can't see anything.
And then a lot of the fight scenes, like insane camera angles and quick cuts, which made it kind of tough to follow what was going on.
I still like the two waterfall fights. I still think those are both really, really well executed fight sequences.
The ones I'm talking about are mainly the ones where he's in the suit.
Okay.
Like in the Korea. It's just like so much is going on and it's so insane. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Taking their helmets off every 3 seconds.
Yep.
In the middle of fights.
Yep.
Big in this movie.
And they're still supposed to be, at the beginning of this movie, a secret nation.
Yes.
A secret goat farming nation.
Yeah.
And the prince of this nation, who is a public figure that everybody knows after everything that happened in Civil War, is now running around in Korea with a super suit that's out of this world.
And expensive vehicles. And people are still like, oh, it's still a goat nation until the very end.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in a situation. It looks like we're going to die. What's going to happen? Something saves us. Happened 4 times in this movie. And it reminded me of Ant-Man Quantumania, where I'm like, you're not going to die. Someone's going to come and save you.
Yeah.
And someone came and saved you, and that happens. And then the big thing is, these were two of the best villains.
Mm-hmm.
And Claw and Killmonger. Great villains. You got to kill them off in the fucking movie. Why? Like, Andy Serkis, I'm watching him. I'm like, this dude is so perfect at this part. And he chews the scenery. And he has the look. He has this awesome look. And you're going to fucking shoot him, even off camera. Like, he's pointing the gun at him. You know he's going to shoot him. And then he kills him. And then Killmonger getting killed. I'm like, these two are so great.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going to take him out of the Marvel Universe because we got to kill the villains. Well, can't just arrest them. We have to kill them.
I have a solution to this, because I think Killmonger accepting his death at the end of the movie is done for thematic reasons, less so than we just got to do it because this is the formula. You know what would help with the whole Claw thing? And I know it's crazy because this is a superhero idea and a very serious Oscar-nominated film. At most points in Claw's history, he becomes a being made out of sound via vibranium. You can't kill him because he's made out of sound.
Mm.
And he can clone himself and do all these things. And he's a complicated, dynamic character that'd be very interesting to see from Andy Serkis after everything that he's presented us with. And you could do him as a CGI character, which I know you just fucking love. So why didn't you do that?
Yeah. Oh, and it's like, why wouldn't you make him a CGI character knowing he is the greatest motion capture actor in history?
I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how, and I know that they're finally getting to it, but listen, Time's ticking. It's been, what, 15 years? Where's the leader been this whole time?
Yeah.
And now you're finally going to address it, and great, but I do have to ask, what about the whole time? Because if this is going to be another issue with Eternals, where it's just like, oh, no answer, that's not acceptable. That's just, it's just patently not acceptable.
Yeah.
So I got to know what the fuck you're doing, because I don't think you have a plan.
I really don't think they know what the fuck they're doing, to be honest with you. There's two bright spots. One, the late, great...
Chadwick Boseman
was awesome in it, as always. Same with Michael B. Jordan. The two of them are just so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the scene where Martin Freeman is interrogating Andy Serkis, and you're like, oh, there's Bilbo and Gollum having a conversation.
See, here's the thing, is that that's the only good thing about that sequence.
Yeah.
Everything else about that scene I hate.
But yeah, the rest of the scene is bad.
I also just don't like this interpretation of Claw just in general. I think that they start with a good mold, but by the end of it, he's a Family Guy character. And it's just so over the top and silly and dumb.
And like the introduction of him in this movie in the art gallery was kind of sweet. Especially where he makes the guy run and then shoots him. He says,
that was good.
Because you could tell he's done this before and he knows you want to make it look messy.
Yeah.
And then it was a little like having him laugh all the time. And
the mixtape is still where I get lost.
Yeah.
Is when he talks at nauseam about his mixtape and his music career and all these things. You're a doctor.
Yeah.
What happened to Dr. Ulysses Claw? Because that would be fascinating if he was one of those kind of Harley Quinn style doctors who is still super smart and super there. But also just doesn't give a shit about societal norms.
Well, we're going to talk about one kind of Mr. Sinister in the X-Men.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant scientist and doctor who just is evil as shit and wants to look like Colossus. So it was, it was a mixed bag on both.
Yeah.
I liked Doctor Strange more than the first time, so last time I saw it, and I liked Black Panther a little less because I guess I didn't. After seeing the movies that have come out since Endgame and getting that, that formula down of what they do, and that seeing this is like the first movie that they really laid into that formula very hard.
See, I have to watch it again because I remember this movie feeling like a breath of fresh air after Doctor Strange and Civil War and Age of Ultron and Ant-Man.
I was the same way until I watched it again.
So I got to watch it again because I really still have very fond memories of this movie. I know that the third act fight scene is the parts underground are bad. The parts above ground are really good.
Yeah.
I really like the sentiment and style and storytelling and narrative of the movie. I would still like to have less Martin Freeman. We don't need to have him flying around in a jet. That's perfectly fine.
It feels to me like they were trying to make him the new Coulson. It's like, all right, we killed off Coulson. Killed off, I do. Quote fingers.
Is he alive or is he not? And Deadpool, we're going to get to Deadpool in a second too. You better fucking address this, at least in a joke, somewhere.
That would be nice.
You should be the one to bring this up.
The fact that he is 100% alive, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is canon.
They won't say that.
They won't, except for there was an episode right before Age of Ultron came out that had Nick Fury, and Agent Coulson at the end of the episode goes in and there's helicarriers. And then if you remember in Agent Ultron, he said, I had a friend that got this out of mothballs. That was the connection between the show.
That's the only connection.
Well, it had Lady Sith was in a few of the episodes.
See, this is the thing. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is connected to the MCU.
Yes.
The MCU has said, no, that's not my kid. That is, I think, the only time the MCU ever references Agents of S.H.I.L.D. in any way.
But like,
how many times does Maria Hill show up? Maria Hill, who knows Coulson is alive.
Yeah.
And she's working with the Avengers. How many times does she show up and not mention this at all? And listen, I get it. Maria Hill sucks as an individual. I'm not arguing that. We all know that to be true. In all canon, she at some point sucks. She does something and you're like, man, you suck. I don't like you. What is this? This has become one of those things where you're trying to pass it off as like a narrative choice. Like, we decided not to address this, and that was what we decided to do. And it's like, that's not.
It didn't make any sense.
That's just bullshit, man. Yeah. This is just bullshit.
Yeah.
You can't have this whole structure that I'm supposed to be, like, going through each individual piece. Oh, look at... Oh, and the craftsmanship. Oh, look at this. And then you have this giant hanging Chad that's, like, an amusement park outside. And you're like, no, no, no. I mean, like... My mom made me let my brother set up his stupid flea circus next door. He is not associated with this. And meanwhile, the flea circus is like, the great MCU flea circus in town. And it's just like, this is mixed messaging, dude, at best.
And what's sad about that is if it's not canon, which I really hoped it was, because they did, of all the bad that they did in that show, they did Ghost Rider really right.
Because they did Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider.
Yes, and it was fucking spectacular, and I wish he would make a transition into the MCU.
Well, now they're talking about if they do Ghost Rider, they want to bring it back to Johnny Blaze.
Which,
and it's just like, I don't. Robbie, you got to decide what to do, man.
Good.
You got to decide what to do. You can't keep going back and forth on this shit. And it just drives me crazy.
Because, like, to me, as much as it's become a caricature and not serious, I hear Johnny Blaze, I'll always think Nick Cage. Because he was so over the top in that movie, both movies, that I will always think that. So it's like, go Robbie Reyes.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just like they should have for Spider-Man, and I know we're not going to get into it, they should have done Miles Morales instead of Peter Parker.
Do both.
You've done Peter so much. You could do both.
Do both.
Especially with the multiverse coming up.
Well, not only that, you had, in the original, you have Sam Elliott as kind of the first Ghost Rider, and he passes the buck on to Cage. Johnny Cage.
Or Johnny Blaze. Not Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Cage.
Yeah. We're going next.
Why not do that? Why not have Johnny Blaze be somewhere in the universe?
Yes.
And he has some call-up where him and, I can't remember the name of the demon, Xanthropos or whatever his name is. You know, now there's a new problem. We have to go back to Johnny Blaze, this one guy I used to be bonded with ages ago. And, you know, he's going to help us solve it. Like, there's interesting ways to do it. But this is always the problem with the MCU.
Yeah.
There's always interesting ways to do it. And then they say, nah. You know what's cool? Clay art.
Yeah, the dumb way to do it.
I'm going
to
do this like a five-year-old, and everybody's going to be like,
And my last thing before we move on to you, I want to do a quick shout-out. If you have not seen the SNL Beavis and Butthead clip yet, you got to watch that. Because Heidi Gardner, who is one of the main cast members, she is, it's a scene, have you seen it?
I've seen clips.
Where she's interviewing Kenan Thompson, and he looks behind her, and it's Ryan Gosling as Beavis.
And Mikey Day.
And Mikey Day as Butthead, and she had not seen the final makeup, so when she turns to see them,
she breaks.
Absolutely, like, breaks hard.
Shatters.
And they play it, especially Mikey Day. Holy crap, like, they play it so perfect as these just guys that look like them, because he's like, I don't know who you're talking about, and like, they have normal voices. It is hysterically funny. I just wanted to throw that as
I'll
a
have
shout
to check
out.
That out.
It's really good.
All right, so we're gonna just touch on this really quick, because I can't imagine a world where we don't, because Deadpool and Wolverine,
yes,
the newest trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine has come out. Here's my thing, does it look good? Yeah, but, you know, conceptually, argumentatively, what they're pitching us looks good. A Wolverine from a dead universe. Deadpool's universe is suffering an incursion event, which is how it's going to go into the core Marvel canon. We have a lot of TVA nonsense. We have a giant man. Giant Ant-Man? See, this is why it gets confusing. Giant Man didn't have a helmet. He had a cowl. Ant-Man has a helmet, so he can communicate with ants.
I saw, because I didn't know what that was either, but then I saw a comic book screen that it was like a large Ant-Man body. So it's like he grew.
See, but this
in
is
the
my
Ant-Man
thing: is that at some point,
it's,
at some point, you have to be Giant-Man, right? There's a point where Ant-Man becomes Giant-Man. It goes Ant-Man, Hank Pym, Giant-Man, right? So my argument is, this, I get confused because in the canon of Giant Man, whether you're talking about Giant Man or Goliath, either version of Goliath, any of the three versions of Goliath, like, they, none of them had a helmet. Mm. So whenever I see a helmet on Giant Man, I'm always like, huh. It's a solely me problem.
Yes.
But it does, like, I do end up in the situation where I'm like, but it's not, it's a Giant Man helmet, but that's oxymoronic because Giant Man doesn't have a helmet. But I guess he does. But he's not really Giant Man. Well, he's just Big Ant-Man. The only thing I can think
of is they're playing off of Civil War.
Oh, no, absolutely. Endgame. Listen, I get it. Yeah. I totally understand what they're doing. I am merely getting stuck in the syntax I love Hank Pym. I love Giant Man. I love that late 60s era Avengers where the yellow and the blue and the Wasp. And, oh, it's so good. Before he loses his mind, pre-Ultron, great stuff. So every time Hank Pym comes up, I'm always kind of sensitive about how it's being approached. And so I see this and I'm just kind of like, no, it's fine. But it just reminds me of all the dumb shit we've done. That's really what the problem is. And I'm
wondering if there will be a fourth wall break thing about...
Oh, that's the only thing that I can hope for with this entire movie is that it's all fourth wall breaks.
I hope he trashes, just constantly trashes the MCU.
I can only hope because it looks like this takes place in some liminal space between universes.
Yes.
As these universes collapse into each other, the space grows bigger and pretty soon it's going to collide with the MCU or some nonsense like that. And so now Deadpool has to try and keep his universe from falling into this liminal space, so he's going around to the TVA to find out who can help him with that, and they're like, I need, because it's Deadpool, he's going to be the one to bring up Wolverine, and they're going to be like, we don't have Wolverine, here's this bad Wolverine, and that's where we're going to get him. Also, I'm hoping you're just saving the cowl for the thing, and that you're not spoiling it for us, but there better be a fucking cowl.
Oh, there'll be a cowl.
There better be a fucking cowl.
And not only should there be a cowl, there better be multiple jokes from Deadpool about Wolverine's height.
Yeah.
There has to be.
Multiple. Several references to him being too tall.
Yes.
Like, every time they cut away and then cut back to them talking and walking, Deadpool should be bringing up, but like, no, I know for a fact.
Yes.
You're less than 5'5".
Yeah.
And I'm looking at you, and you're just clearly 6'2", but I know for a fact.
So I have faith that Ryan Reynolds will put that in.
Yeah.
So there's got to be.
Because they gave us this kind of bait with the cocaine line at the end of the trailer. Yes, which was awesome. Which was funny. But ultimately, this is what I come back to, is just like, but how are these puzzles going to fit together, man? Yeah. And you don't have any credit in the bank for me to be like, yeah, it's going to work. Everybody, just hold faith. It's going to be fine. I don't know how this is going to work. I'm not saying it's going to be bad, but I am saying that I'm going to come in anticipating it being a C-plus movie, which is heartbreaking, but I don't know what else to do at this point with the MCU.
See, and the MCU doesn't have any credit in the bank for me, but I am still one of those people that really like Deadpool 2. I know some people...
Oh, I love Deadpool 2.
And I have faith in Ryan Reynolds. Because it's like, you were able to not only do Colossus right, but you did Juggernaut fucking right.
Exactly. Like, they did the whole line. And their Cable was really good and engaging.
Awesome, yep.
And there's just so many things that they have done well in the past.
Yes.
And I so very badly want to believe
that
they will do it well here, but this is the first time they've had to deal with the Marvel brass, and we know that Marvel chases actual artists away with their behavior.
See, my only hope with this is Marvel has not had a hit movie since... God, when was
Endgame?
If you consider the Spider-Man No Way Home,
Endgame
Marvel,
was still a bigger movie.
Yeah.
Just in terms of box office, Endgame still
made No Way Home got almost $2
billion. It still made a lot of money, don't get me wrong. But Endgame made the most money of all time.
Not having that joint Sony-Marvel thing, there hasn't been an MCU hit.
I think the last one was No Way Home.
Yeah.
Was the last time that people were actually excited about a Marvel a new thing in Marvel. And that, again, is fully based on nostalgia.
Yes.
You have to be nostalgic for every Spider-Man movie that has come out so far.
Exactly.
Which we're going to get to with my next thing, because we got to keep moving. We got a whole show to do. But I look at Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm excited for jokes about why Wolverine gets rid of his sleeves at one point and all these other things. I just have no reason to believe that this ship's going to sail. It looks great.
It does.
It looks great in the harbor. But you know what? When Thor, the funny Thor, when the trailer for Thor, the funny Thor came out and they had the goats and they had all these things and you were like, oh, maybe it's going to be good.
No.
No. Not a chance.
We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Fingers crossed.
I'm coming in with low expectations as a self-defense mechanism, and also to give them a chance. Mm. You know, I came in with pessimism in a lot of these last couple movies. Mm. I'm trying to come in with just low expectations and not necessarily full-ass pessimism. Like, I'm not... When I watched the Black Widow movie, I was so pessimistic about the whole thing, and then I ended up hating it.
Yes.
Which I don't think was because I was pessimistic coming in, but it didn't help.
Yeah.
So, like...
That's true. That is true.
You know. Anyway.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see how that goes. So, I did want to chat really quick. I have been watching Avatar: The Last Airbender, the animated series.
Nice.
Which has been really fun, going back and watching that again in preparation.
Oh, the OG series?
The OG series. Nice. In preparation for when we cover the live the live action. I almost said live animated. The live action series from Netflix, which is inevitably going to come sometime during the
summer. Yeah, probably next couple weeks, I'm guessing.
What I did mostly this week was finish Spider-Man 2, the video game.
Okay.
So anybody who's interested, you can go and watch me stream it. The whole stream is up on YouTube. Each one is about 2 hours long, so it's about as long as our show is on any given week. But it's not a commentary so much as a reaction. It's my honest assessment and reaction as I play through the game.
Okay.
And you get to watch me struggle at times and die in dumb ways. Or get cheated, as the case was on one instance. Where I finished a challenge, it played the beginning of the cutscene, and then it said, oopsie, you gotta do it again. And I was like, you gotta be shitting me.
Oh no, you're kidding me.
No. So it's still, this is one of my things. Mm. We're gonna get to the negatives first. A little glitchy. A little glitchy, a little often. There's a lot of moments where I would be trying to climb buildings. And even that was not something that was a given. Like you
Which I've heard that about this game.
Yeah.
And it makes you think, this is Sony's like flagship game and you can't make sure it
runs.
And
like, this is my thing is that so all of these go back to the original Spider-Man 2, which was the game based on the movie.
Yes.
And that was the first time that they had this open world New York kind of one-for-one scale.
That's PS2, right?
That was, I played it on GameCube.
Oh, GameCube,
It was PS2, GameCube, and the original Xbox. That, the locomotion was perfect.
Mm.
It was brilliant all the way through. The graphics, terrible. But the locomotion was great. You could crawl around walls. You could crawl around things vertically, horizontally. The swing was always there. It was always functional. It always did what you wanted to. And since then, there's been this weird progression down. And to the point where in the last one, I should say the first Spider-Man 2018, you can't go, if you're climbing on a wall horizontally and you get to the corner, you can't go around the corner.
Really?
You just get to the end of the wall and you do one of these just like swimming in place moves. And you have to unstick from the wall, swing around, and then reattach to the wall.
What?
And I'm just like, but you had this done 7 to 10 years ago. So I don't understand why it's this way now. And this game kind of has the next evolution of that, where like sometimes it's because there's textures. Towards the end of the game, there's a lot of Venom textures that interrupt your travel. And some of that makes it impossible to climb some buildings, but not in like the game tells you you can't climb this because it's difficult terrain. And the game just freaks out when you try and climb up the wall. And it just makes it impossible to do anything. Camera problems. A lot of camera problems. This game desperately needs an auto target so that you can focus on one person and actually aim and do things in a way that makes sense. Because right now the computer does a lot of guessing for you. And if the person or target isn't on screen, then it doesn't acknowledge that it exists at all. The game has no object permanence. So if you have a guy that you know is in front of you, but your camera is facing you, so he's technically off screen behind the camera, and you try and throw something at him, the game won't know what you're trying to throw at. And it's just, this is problematic and frustrating. Ultimately, it's not a big deal. And again, it's something that has been seen in the other Spider-Man games, so I'm not going to bash them too hard for it. But again, I note, as with previous games, I note once again, you really need to work on some of the camera mechanics, and you need to work on some of the crawling mechanics. As far as the plot goes, narratively, it's well-paced. You do run into that issue where it is a game where there's a lot of instances where they tell you, you have to go here right now, but there's so many other ancillary things to do and there's no actual time saying you need to go here. So there's a lot of urgency for you to go places, and then you can spend days just going around the map collecting things and doing side quests and this kind of stuff. So that's not a critique on the narrative, but it is a inevitable thing that comes up, is if you want the narrative to have the kind of flow and pace that it's supposed to have, you do have to play through the missions pretty quickly. Because otherwise, you kind of get into this scenario where it's like, man, they said this was really important, but I'm just kind of futzing around. I don't really fucking care. And nothing's happening. So what's the big deal? They make some choices. Canons have evolved. And there are some things that are that they align with. It's not a decision. They just align with current canons. And you're kind of left being like, oh, I fucking hate this. Which is to say, at some point, the symbiotes, they decided, have a hive mind where they're all connected.
That's weird.
And that wasn't the case for like the first 20 years of symbiotes.
No, not even remotely.
That's like when they brought in Null and they did all these other things with the Clintar homeworld, and they made Deadpool the original wearer of the black costume instead of Spider-Man, and then he just puts it in a compartment in a machine. All these retcons have come through, and it always annoys me, see No Way Home, where Venom shows up for no reason. But only because the Venom symbiote writ large knows that Peter is Spider-Man. So even though this Venom doesn't even know who Peter is, he's taken to this other universe. It's messy and
stupid. It was weird, yeah.
But like, that's the excuse that they have, is like, oh, it's a hive mind. It's a hive mind throughout the multiverse. They all know everything. That doesn't make any fucking sense.
And it seems like a lazy narrative to just tie storylines that you got yourself into.
And so this kind of has that problem once the Venom symbiote stuff really gets going in earnest. The build to it is very good in terms of like, we're building this arc, we're getting there at a good pace, with some exceptions. Again, there are a lot of missions where you have to ride bikes or sneak through the high school as a teenager in a memory, or play games at Coney Island, and you're just kind of like, this is interesting. I kind of wanted to play as Spider-Man. That was kind of, I didn't want to play this game as Peter Parker. That wasn't really why I got the game.
Yeah.
I like Pete. Don't get me wrong. Love the guy. Cool guy. Hang out with him all the time if I could. Not why I bought this particular game. The Mary Jane Watson missions kind of fall into that camp too. They're a little more tolerable because they have a little bit more action to them. So it feels a little less like a distraction or filler to just kind of put more stuff in the game to make it have more hours. We're going to have this mission be a Mary Jane mission, which is how it was in the 2018 game. You'd have these Mary Jane and Miles missions, and like, they were fine, but they took up so much time because they were all sneaking around. And it was just like, I hate this. So this one is less sneaking, more action. Again, I talked about on a previous episode that there were some really funny glitches doing some of the Mary Jane missions where I would knock people out and then come back and they'd be stuck in animations.
Oh, weird.
And you'd just be like watching these two people fight stuck in an animation while you stand in front of them and they don't do anything because they're technically knocked out, but the game thinks that they're up, but it doesn't think that they're up. It just thinks that the animations are running. You know, a few moments where it could have been tested out and cleaned up a little bit. They do have the hive mind for the symbiotes, where all the symbiotes have a hive mind and they're all connected. They use it to try and navigate what happens to the people once they're controlled by the symbiotes.
Okay.
But again, even that is very hot and cold, where you have, we're going to get into a little bit of spoiler here. You have basically the end of the game becomes about Harry, once he's reunited with the symbiote, is corrupted. The symbiote is corrupted because Peter wears it for too long and it becomes attached to him. And then when he gives it up, it has all this resentment. And Harry, meanwhile, has had all this resentment because it's keeping him alive. To just gloss over it, Kraven basically kills Spider-Man. Harry is Agent Venom, which I love. That was a great choice to have Harry be Agent Venom at the beginning of the game. So fun. So cool. He saves Peter by giving him the symbiote. Harry was wearing it because he has a debilitating disease that's going to kill him. and it was keeping him alive. So now Harry has gone back into remission, or not into remission. He's gone back into having this illness. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Peter is running around being Black Suit Spider-Man and losing his mind. So when he gives the suit back to Harry finally, well, he wants to destroy it. And Harry has the wellspring of hatred for Peter Parker needed to bond on a cellular level with the symbiote. We've seen this before. It's usually with Eddie Brock. But this is a very good adaptation of that story. Mm-hmm. And I like the twist of it being Harry Osborn. I've seen far worse. The Ultimates universe where Gwen Stacy becomes Carnage, I think that was probably of the worst ones I've seen. So I've seen far worse than this. When we get towards the end of the story, at this point, Harry is now dead set on trying to spread the symbiote to as many people as possible. So you end up fighting a lot of symbiote-infected people.
Okay.
And
does that get repetitive, though?
I mean, all of it gets a little repetitive after a while. Because that's basically the whole game, is Kraven's people show up. You have to fight Kraven's people a lot of the time. There's, like, these Mysterio things that you can do that are just time challenges, basically. Some of them have a few other things. They're kind of the new version of the Taskmaster side quest in the first one. This was interesting. There's this cult of the Flame. And they are just this cult that likes to burn things, and they just show up.
Oh, weird.
It's part of Yuri's storyline, Yuri Watanabe, the Wraith, who's great. I love to have her here. I love Yuri as a character. I love that she's here. I love that they bring back Martin Lee as Mr. Negative, and they're doing all that again. The Flame ends up being a backdoor for Cletus Kasady.
Oh, okay.
And it's this fun reveal at the end where he gets away. His whole plot has been to try and get part of the symbiote. And he gets away, and they say, we got to start looking under all of his old aliases, and one of the old aliases is Cletus Kasady. And until that point, they don't call him Cletus Kasady, so the entire time you're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
He's as crazy as Cletus Kasady?
Interesting.
And so that was really well done. That was a really well-done twist and take on that. And that's left unresolved, so we can look forward to Carnage being somewhere in the storyline.
Yeah.
They have all these symbiotes show up. I bring this up because the Flame is another one of those groups that you just, you're swinging around.
Well, like watching some of the gameplay reminds me of my issues I had with the Batman Arkham games.
Yeah.
Is the stories are great, but the action gets so repetitive.
It gets very repetitive.
It really is just...
You have to be in for that kind of repetition, which like, I like that kind of repetition, but I also used to love the Dynasty Warriors games, the Koei games that are just hack and slash.
Yep.
So I love that. I love that kind of gameplay where it's just very basic combos and you can still do fun, interesting things. But anyway, the whole symbiote thing I bring up because at one point Mary Jane gets a symbiote, which was a very interesting twist. It was well done. Again, they have Scream, and it's just a different twist. But I bring it up because the rules are a little different depending on if the character is a face character or not. If they're not a character we know, they are just mindless monsters that have, you know, a varying series of attack patterns. If they're characters that we know who have any connection to Peter, which kind of makes sense when you think about the symbiote cloning itself and having these resentments for Peter, so that is passed down. You still have, like, if you're closer to Peter, you become a like a boss figure,
almost like a mini boss.
and you're just like, I just feel like you just need to be a little more consistent in terms of what the symbiotes do to people and why. And you know, it became Spider Island, which is one of my least favorite Spider-Man storylines. Spider Island is basically that the Queen and Miles Warren of Jackal and cloning fame get together and break down Peter's DNA and find a way to synthesize it and put it in the water of New York City so that everybody on New York starts developing spider powers, with their ultimate goal being to transform everybody in New York into giant spiders because of spider god magic reasons.
I like that.
That's not a joke. Fully serious.
That's amazing.
But I don't like the storyline because it gets too in the weeds with a few things, and it breaks its own canon. There's this whole thing where they talk about how if you have superpowers, you're immune to the spider virus because your DNA has already been mutated.
Okay.
But you see all these characters that have had their DNA changed, from Captain America to Hawkeye to fucking Flash Thompson, who at some point have had their DNA changed and they are also affected by the spider virus. Kane, Peter's clone, is affected by it. And I'm just like, what the... This doesn't make any fucking sense, weird. Guys. What the hell is happening? So it gets a little in the weeds on some of that stuff. And this has the same problem. You took this idea, we want to make everybody on Manhattan a Venom. Okay, that's an interesting conceit, but to what end? It's you have to dumb it down to this point where it becomes pointless as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it needs some structure and stability. It's like how everybody just calls a symbiote Venom.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true.
That's not even remotely true.
I can't even begin to tell you why that's not
tautologically
correct. But I mean,
even in the awful first Venom movie, they mentioned that the different symbiotes have different names. They're different.
Which they don't. They have names when they bond with someone.
Well, that's what I mean. When they bond with somebody, but it's not like...
No, in the original, Venom says that its name is Venom. It's talking to Eddie and it says, you can call me Venom. And it's like, no. Venom is what happens when the two of you bond together.
Yes.
And maybe moving forward, you could argue that the Venom symbiote...
Well, doesn't it say we are Venom? Or he says that at the end.
He says that at the end. But he introduces himself as Venom. Yeah. I distinctly remember him introducing itself as Venom.
That's movies dumbing it down.
This is what I'm saying, is that you end up in this kind of situation where you take an interesting idea, and because of the viability of it, you put it into a situation where it's really rigged together very, very unsteadily.
Mm.
And you're just kind of like, I guess this is happening now. It's fine. I'm not going to think about the ramifications or any of the deeper implications of anything. I guess we're just going to move on with this. So, but all that said, I do like the game a lot. Mm. I think the narrative is very good. I think that the way that they approach the story is really interesting, because they do the Agent Venom stuff, and because Miles is a figure in the story, you now have, and we'll talk about this with X-Men 97, you now have a lot of elements that weren't available in previous Venom stories. And so doing them in this interesting way and incorporating them in this way is really fascinating.
Mm.
I will say I got a little tired of Kraven. Just in the sense of, like, there were a lot of moments where I was like, Pete, you got to be doing, like, I know, dude.
Yeah.
But this cannot be your approach to this situation. You have to find a better way to handle this. They also made the decision to kill off, you'll love this, basically all the villains from the first game.
Oh, yeah. Why have
them? But kill them all off screen, so you just find, like, their remnants hanging around.
It's so
and Kraven's
stupid.
Notes saying that he killed them. And you're just like, ugh.
It's so stupid.
Okay, all right, I guess. That's pretty lame. I like that Shocker, and I like that Rhino. And, you know, I kind of like, if we were going to do the version where that they did for Brand New Day, where Kraven's family is beginning their last hunt, and they create a bunch of new versions of Spider-Man villains, okay, that'd be interesting, but that's not what we did.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're ever going to do
so
that.
Dumb.
So you're just kind of like, okay, all right. The stuff with Venom is well done. The tendrils get to be a little much at times. They really lean into the tendrils a lot, and it kind of has a Ursula from Little Mermaid vibe at certain points. They did do a really cool thing where Venom grows wings. I was a fan of that. The last few fights weren't as difficult as I thought they would be. Mm. I played on the hardest difficulty, and I did not really struggle with those fights. And anytime I died, it was because of my own... I was not paying attention, or I was trying to do something stupid. It does have a very comic book ending. In that they take a MacGuffin and they put it in a super collider, and they turn up the super collider till it explodes, and they're like, problem resolved!
That is a very complicated
and you're just like, again, I can't help but feel like really bad things would happen if you did this. So narratively, it's kind of up and down. It's not as good or as strong narratively as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I will definitely say that. It is really interesting because the adaptative nature of it is still really fascinating, just the world that they've built in general. I am getting to a point where I'm like, where the fuck are the Avengers? Avengers Tower is covered in Venom shit, and nobody's doing anything about this. At one point, we have to go and check on Harry in his apartment. His apartment is right next to Avengers Tower. And I'm just like, nobody's going to do
one
anything
of them's
got to
be
this.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Which, X-Men 97.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But anyway, I do like this game. I think it could be tightened up a little bit. I like that the New Game Plus actually unlocks more stuff. There's a terrible waste of suit space.
Mm.
They have closets for each character, and Miles has a bunch of really cool costumes. And Pete has some good costumes. None of the ones from the first game, which means no Scarlet Spider, no Spider-Man Noir. There's a Noir version, but it's the one from the movie, the animated movie, not the classic Noir. None of the spider armors,
Weird.
But you know what they do have is all 12 movie costumes.
Oh, of course they do.
And it makes me crazy because they don't even have palette swaps or any of them or anything. It's just all these fucking costumes, and most of them are from the Homecoming series.
Of course.
So it just pisses me right off because I'm like, I want the Mark III Spider Armor. It's fucking cool as hell, and I would love to have the Mark III Spider Armor and the Strike Armor for Miles, and have that be the tag team that we're going off of, but I can't do that because you didn't give it to me. Mm-hmm. And instead, I have the Inside Out black and gold Spider-Man costume, which, again, is Inside Out because he spilled something on it, and it was stained. I just want to emphasize, this is why that costume was made.
Yeah.
This costume wasn't made for any particular... Doctor Strange didn't come along and was like, magic, here's a new costume. Peter spilled something on his costume and was like, I can't go out looking like this. And so he turns it inside out. Cool.
That's a good reaction.
So anyway, I do like Spider-Man 2, the game. It desperately needs a different title, any kind of title. Whether you call it Kraven's Last Hunt, whether you call it Kraven's First Hunt, whether you call it Harry and Peter Heal the World, any subtitle of any kind, because there have been so many Spider-Man 2s already.
Yeah.
You can't just call it Spider-Man 2.
That's true, because every time I hear Spider-Man 2, I think about the tutorial with Bruce Campbell narrating it.
Exactly.
Like, that's Spider-Man 2 to me.
You think of that game, or you think of Doc Ock in that movie in the Raimi-verse. You cannot just call it Spider-Man 2. You need a subtitle in the most desperate way possible.
And you definitely can't call it Spider-Man 3 for the next game because you think about emo dancing Spider-Man.
That's what I'm saying.
Nope.
So, like, you got to call it, like, Hunt in New York.
Yeah.
You know, there's something you can do here, but doing nothing is not an option. But that's what they chose to do. But I come down a little hard. I still give this game an A because it's very enjoyable. I'm also still terribly biased. I think on other people's scales, this would be closer to a B. But I just get such a kick out of all the little things that they do. They had a whole Spider-Verse thing that connected to the movies. Like, they had a lot of really cool shit thrown in there. And the adaptation of the villains is so tight. So, like, I do like a lot of stuff here. I just wish that they had tuned it up. And also, why you got to get rid of DLC? And why you got to get rid of multiplayer mode? You had what we wanted. It was right there. And you just decided, like, Batgirl. No. Nobody wants this.
That doesn't make any sense.
And it just makes me so angry because it was right there. And it looks so good. And it's what would revitalize this game in a big way. And Gwen Stacy isn't even in the universe. That's a whole thing. They have Cindy Moon at the end. Silk, which I fucking love. That's great. Silk is going to be Miles' sister or something. It's going to be a whole thing, and that's going to be fun, and I'm down for it. There's not been a mention of Gwen Stacy, which there's reasons for that. We can go into the reasons for that, but I would like to know. I would like to know why. So,
kind of piggybacking real quick before we move on to football, I had to throw this out, and you brought up Batgirl, and you brought up Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah.
Kraven the Hunter, the movie, got pushed to December.
Yeah.
My take on that movie is never going to come out.
I had the exact same thought. Yep. I had the exact same thought. Sony is pushing it as far back as they can, and then sometime during the summer, they're going to very quietly say, we're just not going to release Kraven and take the tax write-off.
Because the James Bond producers are like, this cannot be the last movie before our new James Bond puts out our next Bond movie.
Yeah.
It cannot. It will never come out.
I think there's a myriad of reasons why it's never going to come out.
Yep.
I think it just looks like shit.
It looks like shit, Madam Web proved.
They can't do another one. That's a big thing, is that Madam Web tanked like Morbius did.
Yes.
They can't do it a third time.
I mean, you think the last three of their movies being Morbius, Madam Web, and the second Venom, which was terrible. All three of them were god-awful.
Awful movies.
And they know this is going to be bad.
And this is
going to
be another one in the tank.
Yes.
How can you possibly justify
putting
another one in the cartridge?
It'll never come out.
No, it looks awful. We're going to touch on football as quickly as possible.
Quickly as possible.
Only to say that this is the way I put it to you before the show, and I think that this is still the best way to put it. When you're trapped at the bottom of a pit, usually the way out of the pit is not to say, hey, I got a shovel. Let's keep digging.
Yeah.
But that seems to be the Bills' entire plan. And the Chiefs are like, hey, do you want us to dig you even deeper? And the Bills are like, yes, please. How did you know that we were trying to fuck ourselves over? Oh, my God. You can help us with that shit, dude. And it's you? Awesome. Let's fucking go. It's
been
a rough weekend.
Especially with all three teams in their division.
Yeah.
I mean, Miami hasn't done a lot, but they have improved a little in this offseason.
They've improved generally over the last few years more than the Bills have.
The Jets having Aaron Rodgers back is going to make them a viable contender for the division if he stays healthy.
If he stays healthy, which is an enormous
And then even the Patriots have improved themselves quite a bit in this offseason, including a move they did, which I think is going to be a great move for them, is they brought in Slater, who just retired, their special team guru, who was the person that helped bring that team together most of the times. He's an advisor on the team now to help with team chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, dude, their defense is going to be great. They got J.J. McCarthy, so they have – or not J.J., Drake May, right? I think the Patriots did. So they have a solid, like, potential quarterback of the future. It's like, dude, Buffalo, what the fuck are you
doing? What the fuck are we doing?
Are you aiming to go back down into the we didn't make the playoffs again?
I think that there's kind of a sense of, like, let's just tank this thing. Let's, like, let's fold it in for this season.
I don't know what else they're doing.
But to what end? To what degree? I don't understand it. And then Brandon Bean goes out and he trades out of the first round. Terrible idea. Terrible idea. We still get a wide receiver. Okay, fine. What did we get in return? We got, like, not a second round.
Yeah.
We got I guess we did get a second round, but we gave up our first round, so we didn't really get a second round.
Yeah, you didn't really get a second round.
We got, like, a fifth round. We exchanged fourth rounds.
It doesn't make any sense.
And then you traded back even further!
This doesn't make any sense.
And I'm just like, what the fuck are we doing?
And it's fun... Not fun, because I feel bad for Bills fans, but it's like you look at what Brandon Bean has done with the Bills, and you look at what Ryan Poles has done for the Bears, and you're like, that's a GM that had a game plan and had a roadmap, followed that roadmap to a T, and now has that team set up to be a contender in the next couple years, to where Buffalo is like, it's like watching the Bears over the last 30 years, where it's like, we will get a great player like Josh Allen, and then you just destroy everything around him.
I just really don't understand the thought process of any of it.
I don't get it either.
Like, it just doesn't make any fucking sense. Your plan is... So, let me get this straight. Let me get this straight. Because I'm trying so hard to see the bigger picture here, dude. Okay, so we pay Josh Allen like a king, because that's what you have to do at some point.
Yes.
It needs to be done. Okay, fine. Josh is one of the reasons we can't get over the hump.
Yes.
Like it or lump it, he's part of the problem.
He is part of the problem.
I'm not saying we fully start over on that, but to not acknowledge that he is part of the problem would be asinine.
Yes.
The only thing keeping us afloat is our defense. As a result of Josh taking up all that money, our defense, which was already strapped between injury and just generally not having enough players at key positions... is now decimated.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm coming into this and I'm like, okay, so our defense, we have like a ton of starters leave because we can't pay for all of them. What do you do in that situation, right? You draft. That's the thing that you do. You draft because like we can't afford to bring on a bunch of free agents, so you got to draft. So I'm sitting here trying to not even think about the draft because I know that this is going to happen is the thing. Like I'm not even trying to be optimistic. I know that this shit's going to happen at this point. But we get to draft night, and I'm not even looking at my phone, and I just look down, and I see that we traded out of the first round, and I'm like, well, fuck us. I guess fuck us, because we didn't need anything.
Yeah.
We didn't need anything. So we just traded out of the first round, but we didn't get anything in return for that. And then we traded even further back in the second round for a bunch of fifth round picks that we then packaged to trade away again for nothing.
And here's what I'm going to say about these quarterback contracts. If you are a quarterback in the NFL and you take one of these monster deals, you do not care about winning.
No.
Period. End of story.
I'm at that
point. The only reason Brady won as much as he did is he took such a hit.
Yeah.
But he knew that through endorsements, and also if you sign a 5-year, $100 million contract with $100 million all guaranteed and you get paid $20 million a year, you're still making $100 fucking million.
Not only that, you can still make up that difference in commercials.
Yes.
All over the fucking place.
And your post-career. Look at some of these players are making far more money in their post-careers than they did during their career.
Like, if you set yourself up to be a great player, which Josh has, he is electric, he is dynamic, he brings asses in the seats. You should, it's part of the honor system. You should be like, listen, guys, I have extra bylaws written into the rules and everything to keep me healthy. I'm going to take a hometown hero deal.
Yes.
And that way we can, like the Shohei Ohtani, like at least defer it so we can, because like you've now sacked us for an entire year.
Yep.
where we're not going to have a defense, and the offense was perfectly healthy last year.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I always come back to, is that the offense was totally healthy, and the defense was ravaged. And the defense was why we stayed in any games, and the offense was why we could not stay in games most of the time.
I agree.
And now we're doubling down on that by just trying to put new pieces into the offense. We're going to take out Stephon Diggs because he's a troublemaker, and we're going to put in some new guys and draft a rookie. And but we're also not going to, like, yes, we drafted the positions that we needed to, but like so much later than I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I'm just left like, what did we get out of this? What did we get out of this? Because it feels like all we got out of this is disappointment and frustration.
Yeah.
But they're the professionals.
I don't get it.
I don't fucking get it, man.
I this has been the most head-scratching offseason for a team, being Buffalo, that I've ever seen. It's like, you're saying you're rebuilding without saying you're rebuilding.
Oh, they have basically packed it in.
Oh, it's,
I'm fully serious. Like, they have basically said, we are not making the playoffs this year.
Yep.
We are not going to, we're not even going to, like, not going to win the division. We're not going to make the playoffs. We are going to just try and not have a devastating injury to anybody who's key, but we are not going to do anything to try and make it to the Super Bowl. We had the last few years. We tried really, really hard. It reminds me of when Bill Belichick in 2019, when Brady left and the Patriots got worse, and Bill Belichick was like, well, what did you expect, Boston? We just pushed for the last few years to try and win more Super Bowls, and we did. So, of course, we're going to have this down period. But the Bills don't even have that!
No. And that's the thing with these quarterback contracts, too. It's like, I can understand Burrow getting his contract. He took his team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I can understand Mahomes getting his contract. He's won Super Bowls. All these other guys, it's like, dude, Herbert and all them, you haven't even won playoff games.
Nah.
What the fuck are you doing getting all this money? Yeah, you're a great regular season quarterback, but what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah.
If you don't win in the postseason, Lamar Jackson chokes hard every postseason, did this year against the Chiefs. There's no way they should have lost that game. And it's like, dude, you are the fuck. If you're going to get that money, you need to be able to put the team on your back and fucking take them when they need it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it makes me crazy that the Bills have decided, like, I guess our time in the sun is over. We're not going to say that, and we're not going to acknowledge it, but we're going to fully gut the pantry and start all over again.
Because the AFC this year actually got better than it was last year, and it was amazing last year.
Yeah.
I mean, you're telling me right now that you think you're better than Houston?
Oh, no.
Not even close.
Not even a little bit. Not even kind of.
Nope.
No. At best, we are 9th or 10th seed. At best.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
That is, we are not even sniffing it.
And that depends on how quickly Harbaugh can turn around San Diego. Or not San Diego. I keep calling it San Diego. Los Angeles. You know, he's doing what could, in the long run, help Herbert by building up the offensive line, building a running game, and then saying, I'm going to turn you into what Kaepernick was for us, even though you throw better than Kaepernick did, but he's going to be a quarterback that kind of underperformed, and we're going to turn you into a Super Bowl quarterback by not making you do everything.
Yeah, by giving you weapons that you can use.
And protection.
That's another thing, is, and we can move on after this. Josh has been given everything.
Yeah.
He's been given a great defense. He's been given weapons at every position. I think the only thing he hasn't had is a good offensive coordinator for more than 2 years at a time.
Yeah.
I think that's really been the big issue, is that Daboll figured out the puzzle and then immediately got hired off, and then Dorsey coached like a coward. And I'm going to be one of those Barstool type guys. He coached like a fucking coward.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the time he left, the damage was already done.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's like, if we had just run with Cook the entire season, maybe he gets hurt, but maybe we have maybe we're the number one seed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we get the bye week. Maybe we have rest. Maybe we have time to recircle and get ready. And instead, we throw to Shakir in the back of the end zone when he's double covered.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
No fucking reason.
No fucking reason.
All right, folks, we got to move on.
We got to move on.
So we got
to
get to.
My heart's gonna die if we stay in here anymore.
Yeah.
Hey, friends and enemies, this is Alfred the editor. I just wanted to really quick let you know that there's a little audio glitch every once in a while. In this next segment, I tried to cut around it, but some of it's unavoidable. So you'll just hear kind of a staticky buzz every once in a while. So just try and ignore it. Consider it the devil that got cut being a little pissy about not being in the show. So enjoy the segment on X-Men.
So we need to go to X-Men 97.
Yes.
So it's like, once again, for 7 episodes. I have to say, I don't love the series.
Okay.
There are a lot of things I like about it. I would say right now I would give the series probably a B.
I'm very divided on this series, honestly. It is a 10-episode series, so we still have 3 more episodes to drop. I go back and forth on it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of elements of this that I do really like. You know, the authenticity of going back to the costumes and everything is really interesting. Being able to include some of those characters that weren't around in 94. So you can actually talk about some of these characters and do the Goblin Queen, which that was a twist I wasn't expecting.
That was crazy.
That was crazy. And anytime you have that kind of shit happen, you're just like, damn, son. Damn, man. Wow. All right. But for everything like that, you have a few things here and there that are kind of silly and ridiculous.
Dude, this might be the worst Wolverine.
I don't mind this Wolverine.
I hate the voice acting. And
it's
the same
voice actor.
I know it is, but for some reason, I don't know if it's just because if you think about it, he doesn't really do shit in this first 7 episodes. He doesn't do anything. He's barely in some of the episodes, and then some of the fights, it's like, did he even do anything?
See, I like this approach to Wolverine because Wolverine isn't one of my favorite characters. So I'd rather spend time with Rogue and with Gambit.
Oh, no, Rogue is awesome.
Yeah, I will say the Storm stuff is a little drawn
out.
Yeah,
I could give a shit about it.
And every time Magneto shows up, I can't take him seriously with his evening wear gloves.
No, when I saw Magneto, all I could think about is like, I wonder if Al thinks that's Magneto from Roadhouse because he's got the hair. He's got the hair from Roadhouse.
He's got the big hair and like I got to look up Magneto's costume in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because I got to see if this is something that I just don't remember or I missed and but like the costume is so stupid. it's so stupid. It's just ridiculous to look at these giant gloves and
and the big M on his chest, like he's an M&M or something.
And the whole thing is just very silly looking. Yeah. Yeah, okay, I'm looking at the canon version of this. He does have the big M, but the gloves come up to his elbows. Not up to his shoulders.
Yes. No, it's
the evening wear gloves are just so, like, the latex evening wear, it makes him look like the most powerful germaphobe on the planet. And I'm just like, ah, what's going on with this, dude? We're going to get into some of the Rogue and Magneto stuff later, but that stuff is also, like, that's an interesting thing that had developed since the X-Men. So if we're talking about and lauding it for doing things that happened after the show was on the air, this is one of those things.
Yeah.
But I don't think it fits here.
No.
And I think it kind of pointedly doesn't, and you know that. I also can't help but feel like every time when... So the animation is pretty good.
It is. It kind of, though, had... There's some points that it's too retro and it kind of looks, and then there's points where it's not. It's kind of
like
weird.
For me, there were a few too many moments where it looked like a Adult Swim cartoon.
Yes.
With very heavy black lines and just like the style didn't change. It reminded me a lot of Archer and Frisky Dingo and like that animation house. And it's not bad, but it was distracting.
Yeah.
It was definitely distracting to be like, it doesn't look bad. I also don't know that I can say it looks as good as the original. Because, like, the original was drawn that way for style purposes. But one of the things I really like about that series is that they didn't reuse a lot of animation.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did change the animation later on in the series because they ran out of money, the animation got far worse. So this is still better than that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know. There's just something, some kind of uncanny thing about the animation every once in a while where you're just like, this just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
They also are changing some of the rules a little bit. As much as I fucking love Gambit charging Wolverine's claws, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I have a lot, especially as the series goes on, I just end up having more questions, honestly, about that choice. As cool as it is, and it is cool.
It's really damn cool.
I gotta ask if this is worth it narratively, if you're not kind of shooting off your toes because you want the shoe to fit.
I was not a massive fan of the show for the first 3 episodes. It took the 4th episode with the Motendo just because I loved when they went into the video game and it looked like the X-Men.
Yeah.
That was fucking awesome. That was
really good. It looked
and I did like, even though they underutilized him, I did like Sunspot. Sunspot was always one of my favorites.
Sunspot is really interesting the way that they use him. Again, this is another issue for me.
It gives that like dynamic of the family.
Yeah.
But you don't see the powers that much, which I love Sunspot's abilities.
He has great powers and great abilities. But like also, again, this is just me getting nitpicky. But Sunspot's whole thing is that he doesn't want to be seen with the X-Men because he doesn't want his parents in Brazil to find out that he's a mutant. The X-Men have an entire news crew come to the house and interview Sunspot and Jubilee. And I'm just left sitting like, wasn't your whole thing like you wanted to lay as low as possible? And then later on when we meet his mom's like, this is great. We can make sure that no one finds out you're a mutant. Wait a minute. I'm pretty sure...
He was in the mansion.
He was in the mansion.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was there?
Yeah.
With the X-Men. Practically wearing a costume. So I just end up having some questions.
Yes. Yeah. No, it was...
But a lot of the narratives kind of fall into that gap.
Yes.
Where you're just kind of like, you're supposed to take it on spec... And then when things change or kind of grow, there's not a linearity to it. Mm. So you're not like, I get what's happening. You're just kind of left being like, uh-huh, okay. And in some cases, that's fine. Like when we meet the Goblin Queen.
Yes.
That was a big one where I was like, I just have so many questions. But we're not going to stop and ask any of them. So I guess we're just going to move on.
Mm.
And then you name drop Madeline Pryor at the end. And I'm like, all right, that's it. I don't know how, but that was enough to make it over the finish line.
Yeah,
it was for that.
Cool. Yeah,
that was fine. Fun, cool. But you know, there are just a lot of other moments where I'm just like, I don't know.
I mean, I'll be honest. The thing that kind of brought everything together for me, as far as loving this show, I would say it's between him and Colossus, and who's my favorite X-Men of all time. I love the Nightcrawler.
Oh my god, and he's here.
He was so fucking perfect. Like, visually, his personality was so perfect.
And they did the priest thing.
Yes!
Which they did because he was a priest in the original show.
Yes.
And he only shows up in one episode in the original... No, two episodes. Two episodes in the original show. But that was one of the... Nightcrawler is my favorite X-Men.
Dude, he was so
good. And he's so good here.
So fucking good.
And I was just so thrilled when he showed up. And then he's in the credits. And I'm like, fuck yeah! He made the opener, guys. He's here. Kurt's here, guys. It's all going to be fine.
So good.
I just love having Nightcrawler around because you don't always get good adaptations of Nightcrawler. You know, sometimes they go too far in one direction. Sometimes they go too far in another direction. And here, I think that this is a really fun interpretation of the character.
Yeah.
He is a little bit more fun and fancy-free than he was in the original show, where he is just like a very stoic priest in the original cartoon. And here he's like cracking wise and has swords and like none of this stuff was in the original.
Yeah.
I was so thrilled to see him here. I got really excited when I saw Colossus at one point, and then I realized it was Morph, and I was like, God damn it.
Yep.
Fuck. Shit. Which, like, I like that Morph is part of the crew.
Yes.
And that he's a... Because Morph dies in, like, the first episode, and then he's brought back, and he has on and off and adventures with them here and there, but he's not really a part of the day-to-day activities of the X-Men. So having him here as a character is a breath of fresh air.
And I love that he's like besties with Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's like the two of them are...
I love that scene where he's trying to get Wolverine to chill out and laugh after everything happens on Genosha.
Uh-huh.
And he comes up with a six-pack of beer. Wolverine's like, fuck you. And then he turns into Sabretooth and throws the beer at him. And it's like, all right.
That was awesome.
Yeah, this is it. So I do like it. The stuff with Storm is a lot. It's just an ongoing thing.
Yeah, it's such a weird storyline.
I like this version of Storm a lot.
Yes.
And they got, again, they brought most of the original actors back. I think the only one that's different, you have Cyclops and I think Gambit are the two big ones that are different than the original cast. Though that said, even though Rogue is still played by the same woman, Lenore Zann, she does sound different to me. Just, you know, 20 years will do that to a voice. I like episode 2. A lot. I like the stuff with the Executioner and the Friends of Humanity, bringing back Friends of Humanity as kind of this inroad. The whole thing with her, spoiler alert, losing her powers and then having to get them back. I was just like, God damn it.
It just went on too long.
Not only does it go on too long, you know what I come to superhero stuff for? Fucking superheroes. You know what I don't come here for?
Love stories?
Superheroes having to learn to be human so that they can then be superheroes again. Yeah. I'm not here for it,
especially,
dude.
You know she was getting her powers back.
There's
so
no way.
Why drag it out over three episodes?
When she goes, at one point after she loses her power, she goes up to her room and she holds her costume, right?
Yes.
And there's the big burn mark on her costume from where she got shot. The burn mark, they didn't track to anything. So it just hangs in the air while the costume moves
that.
Under it. And it's kind of that for the whole plot.
Awesome.
Of like, I'm going to ignore it, though I know ultimately it will mean nothing.
That's
like,
awesome,
and
though.
Also,
I didn't notice that.
I kind of feel like Storm met Forge in the original. I could be wrong about that, but Forge was leading X-Factor? I think he was leading X-Factor. And they fought the X-Men, and I could have sworn Storm was part of that fight. So now I'm confused. But again, I'm getting nitpicky. The stuff with the adversary and all that, it just didn't do anything for me. Was this a psychic battle? Was this a spiritual battle? Was all this actually happening and it's magic? We didn't get an answer on any of that.
Not at all.
And it was just very confusing because I kept on thinking like, oh, this is taking place in her mind. But then it doesn't.
Yeah.
I kept on waiting for
it
them
materializes
to...
materializes into an actual...
And actually, like, she falls through the roof of the building.
And I do love how when Storm gets her powers back... The whole thing is she's racing against the clock to save Forge, and then
she
gets her power, she goes flying on a trip. I'm like, dude, you need to go back and save his
you've
ass.
You've got business to
like,
attend to.
He came with you because he's so near death, he couldn't wait for you to get back.
He didn't want
to
die alone, which was a hardcore line of like, I'm coming with you.
Oh
no, you're not.
God.
I'm going to go on my own. And he's like, no, I don't want to die alone. Like, if something happens, I don't want to die alone, so I'm coming with you, even if it kills me. And I did like that they name-dropped that Forge is the guy that made the collars.
Yes.
Because in the original, they kind of went back and forth on that. I think that they implied both that Forge was a part of the design, but also that it was designed by somebody in Scotland, which they reference here again.
Yep.
But they never say who in Scotland. So I don't know if that is Moira McTaggart or someone else. Could be. Who knows? But I do like this. I like the evolution, if you will, not to put too fine a point on it, of some of the things here where Cyclops uses his eye beams to move around.
Yeah.
That was cool.
When he did
that was actually cool.
The AKA Deadpool superhero landing when Ball jumps out of the plane. He just uses it to slow down. That was fucking awesome.
I was just like, this is pretty rad.
Yeah, it was fucking
and
awesome.
And Jean Grey being able to lift entire buildings. This is pretty good, guys. This is pretty good. The whole thing with Mr. Sinister is interesting. I'm intrigued by this whole overarching plot that they've developed.
Yeah.
I can appreciate doing Mojo. I do kind of feel like Mojo and the Storm storyline are hand in hand for me. Of kind of like these auxiliary storylines that I don't really care about.
Mm.
I'm supposed to. And Charles Xavier with the Shi'ar is right in that same camp of like, I know I'm supposed
to care.
Dude, that
was weird. I didn't give a fuck.
I know I'm supposed to care.
I mean, you got to
I
see the Guardian,
care.
Which was awesome.
Well, like,
this
is the thing. Is like, it was really funny because it gave me that superhero moment that I love, that I go to superhero stuff for. Where we show up and it's the Shi'ar, and I'm like, oh, okay, the Shi'ar, we're doing the Shi'ar. That makes sense. We were going to get to the Shi'ar eventually. And they're fighting someone. I'm like, who are you fighting? The Kree? Yeah,
they're fighting
Kree.
Yeah, he's got Ronan's ass.
And
right
he has
now.
The ultimate weapon,
yeah.
And he's showing why it should have been a difference maker against the Marvels in the Marvels. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I love Professor X taking the Shi'ar to school.
That was
fucking really
cool.
Fun. But there were just a lot of moments in there where I was like, tick, tick, guys. What are we doing here? Let's go. What's happening here? Especially given that the episode right before it was so huge. And it was one of those episodes that leaves you being like, because it's the one where everything on Genosha happens.
Oh, yes, yes,
and
yes,
so we
yes.
spend the entire episode on Genosha.
Remember it.
And you know something bad's going to happen. And then Cable shows up and he's like, I'm too late. I'm sorry, Mom. All this shit happens. And again, we're going to get back to this because there were some conflicting things here. But that was such a powerful episode, and it ends, and you're just like, did that really happen?
Yeah.
Was that a foresight thing? Did that really happen?
And the endings irritated me, because during the episode, they had some hard transitions that felt like the ending of the episode.
Uh-huh.
So when the episode finally ended, I was like, oh, God damn it! Because I thought it was another hard transition. I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah, no, I did get that a few times of like, because the episodes are all about 10 minutes longer than the original series was.
Yeah.
Which I like. I like that a lot. We complain all the time about Disney ignoring the laws of time. and yep. how stories are supposed to be told, and they're giving this one room to breathe, and I can deeply appreciate that because it's an animated feature, and that means even more to me that you're doing it that way. I do have to say, without going into any of the gory details of the attack on Genosha, I have a lot of questions vis-a-vis who survived.
Yes.
I have a lot of questions. Like, did you set up Madeline Pryor just to kill her? Is she gone? Did we just do this whole thing just for you to kill her three episodes later?
I can't imagine she's dead.
Right? That's what I came back to. But also, y'all can't ignore mutant abilities, okay? To which I say, I don't mind that you have Sebastian Shaw on Genosha running the council. That's, you know, we can go back and forth on whether the Hellfire Club would be allowed to associate with these people, if they would trust them, for any number of reasons, not the least of which being that Jean Grey is one of the members, and she might not love hanging out with the Hellfire Club or the Inner Circle if you're Fox Saturday Morning. Sebastian Shaw's whole thing is that he can absorb any kind of energy. He doesn't give a two fucks about a bomb falling on him.
Yeah.
And he's one of the guys that dies. Like, we see him passed out dead next to Emma Frost, and Emma Frost is like, I've never turned into my diamond form before. That's weird. And I'm like, that you didn't need to make that line. You don't use your diamond form because you find that your telepathy is more useful as a power than your diamond form is, and you can't use your telepathy while you're in your diamond form, hence no one knowing a lot about the diamond form because you don't use it. We didn't need you to be like, oh, her power's evolved. No.
That's I'm just dumbing it down for...
But this is what I'm saying is, like, don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that.
It's unnecessary.
Don't do that.
If you're watching this cartoon, you're not just a run-of-the-mill Marvel fan.
No. I'm sure there's a bunch of casuals that are watching this.
Yeah, but nowhere near something like an MCU movie.
But, like, come on. Give us something. This is supposed to be ours. This is, like, this is the thing that's... The adults that were kids then who are eager to see this continued.
Yeah.
This is not for the kids that were born 3 days ago. Like, don't do this, man. Don't give me this
and
one.
And especially when you go all in. Like, I loved when Rogue, no pun intended, went rogue.
Yeah.
And fucking was like, Thunderbolt's like, we built this to keep the Hulk. And she fucking breaks in. You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
I love that they address Cap.
Yes!
Which was like, it's one of those things where, again, canonically, I ended up having a lot of questions. Because conceptually, we see Cap in an episode with Wolverine back during World War II. They have a secret op mission that they go on together, and there's a joke about Wolverine not having his claws and all these things, because at that point, Wolverine's claws were still man-made. They weren't bone claws. He didn't have those. That wasn't part of the canon yet. In that same universe, Spider-Man meets this version of the X-Men. We see Spider-Man go back and forth with them. There's a whole thing with them, right? In that version of Spider-Man, he meets Captain America, who is stuck in a time portal, basically, fighting the Red Skull. They're just trapped in between universes, and that's kind of where that Captain America is. And so Cap shows up here, I was just like, huh.
Yeah, that threw me off a little bit.
I don't mind that you're here, but I do have questions.
Yeah.
And honestly, I probably look too far into this, but also, honestly, I kind of feel like this is our thing, and if any of you writers were taking it seriously, you would look into all this shit.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I love seeing Cap, and I love that there was this moment. First off, I love two things about this. One, we get an uncanny Avengers call out, which is fucking awesome, where you have Rogue and Cap talking to each other and discussing discourse and how best to handle situations. And then I love the moment where she gives him back his shield, and he's like, you know, I can't condone what you're doing. And she's like, oh, well, if you're not going to help, here's your fucking frisbee.
Throws it into the mountains. Yeah, that was awesome.
Go get your frisbee.
And you don't really see him after that. He's just kind of like,
ah, fuck.
Which I did look up. Josh Keaton voiced Cap America. He's from Spider-Man. He played Peter Parker in the Spectacular Spider-Man.
He is my favorite.
Yes,
Spider-Man.
He is. And when I saw that, I was like, oh.
Yeah, because he also plays Cap in the What If series.
Oh, okay.
And so I when I saw him here, I was like, good for you, dude. My boy getting work. So overall, I would say I like this show. I like the cuts that they're going after. I think that is authentic to the original cartoon in a lot of ways, a lot of really deep cut things. I do end up having a lot of questions about having Magneto be such a prominent character. I have a lot of questions regarding his relationship with Rogue, not in terms of the physicality of it. I get the physicality of it, but you can't say we just pretended like it didn't happen in your explanation and have that be it. That's not... I didn't take it for Eternals, and I'm not going to take it here.
I agree.
If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and you just don't do that storyline then.
And, like, where is Colossus?
Where is Colossus?
Some of these X-Men
Why did they do magic? They brought out magic.
Yeah.
They had magic fight the Goblin Queen via morph, but no Colossus.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't understand.
I have so many questions now.
And like,
because Illana was a sick little girl when we saw her last, and it's apparently only been about 2 years, and now she's full on magic.
And you can't even put him on Genosha and say, yeah. Oh, well, he's on there helping or something. No.
We had Dazzler on Genosha. We had fucking
Well, Nightcrawler Dust. Was Genosha where we first see him.
Nightcrawler, Dust, I think, Glob. Like, there were so many deep cuts.
All Pixie, the Morlocks.
All the Morlocks.
Morlocks were there. And then, wasn't Angel... I can't remember.
Angel shows up as Morph. Morph turns into Angel.
That's right. He wasn't even. But once again, why isn't he?
Why isn't he here? Because like,
I don't get.
Because like again, Angel had a weird. Angel's whole storyline in that series was kind of messed up from the beginning, because that was one of the moves that they made midstream that broke the canon. Basically, they introduced Angel in the first season, and nobody knows who he is.
Even though he was a founding member.
But as we go through, we find out that he's a founding member, and you just end up with this situation like, so. But nobody...
Yeah.
Everybody acts like... There was this whole big deal when we found Bobby Drake, he was doing shit, and we tried to bring him back on the team, and everybody made a big fucking deal about that. Nobody... is going to make a big deal about Angel and everything that he's going through? Because it seems like it's a lot worse than what Bobby's going through.
Yeah, no, by a ton worse.
That has always been messy.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen Angel on... Again, I agree. I think Genosha is just a place where you can put a bunch of really interesting Easter eggs. That's what they did in Wolverine and the X-Men. When they have Genosha, there's just a bunch of interesting Easter eggs just dotted throughout that whole thing. Gambit also integral in the downfall of Genosha there.
Yeah.
So, interestingly enough, he plays a role in both cases. But I look at this and I'm just, I like it. It comes back to things like the animation being weird and spending so long with the Shi'ar and still mispronouncing Macron. It's not M-cron.
Mm.
Why would it be M-cron? In what world? In what world? You know it's Deken, but you think it's M-cron? You know it's Deken, but okay, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Mm.
But I am curious to see where this is going. The reveal that Bastion is the lead villain, the Sentinel turned human, turned Sentinel from the future is the lead villain. And all the stuff with Cable, the fact that they are doing Cable's storyline
was fucking
for
awesome.
Real.
But for that's real. The thing, though, is they just really brought him in last episode. He's got only 3 episodes. How are they going to tell his whole story as the finale?
They've already kind of told his story in the original cartoon.
Yeah, but it's like this, I know this is, and it's a continuation of that, but it's also still a lot of people that didn't see that original show. You've seen a couple of the, it seems like they're kind of reintroducing certain characters and whatnot, like even Storm with her powers. Because it was very reminiscent to me of when River Song, when Rory and Amy Pond, River Song's like, oh, I'm your daughter.
Yeah.
But they went into a lot after that where here Cable's like, I'm your son. And you only have a few episodes left to even deal with that.
But to be fair, they are also covering a lot of stuff in each episode.
Which I wish they would have a longer season. Like it seems like they're rushing through it.
I don't know that they're rushing through it, but they have a lot to cover, and they are definitely moving through it at a pace.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things that I do remember about the original, too, was that it was very much a, we have a problem, let's try this. It worked.
Mm.
So kind of that the end of the first episode where they do the big shot where Gambit charges Wolverine's claws and then he cuts off Master Mold's head. And then that's the end of the fight. That was extremely of the original cartoon of just like, oh, I thought there was going to be more because you had the cool moment where Beast is like controlling one of the Sentinels. Nah, Wolverine's going to cut off the head and we're going to go home.
Yeah. See, but like even the Mr. Sinister character who is like, the Loki of this, where you have the big bad controlling him and telling him what to do, but you think he's the big bad. He's maybe in 10 total minutes of all these episodes combined.
I mean, but again, that goes back to it being from the original. We spent a lot of time with Mr. Sinister, and honestly, it would kind of fall into that Emma Frost camp of like, but we know this. Like, why are we reiterating all this shit? We know this. Like, I like, one of the things that I really like about this is that they don't walk you through the plot. Okay, so if you're the original, you know a lot of things. So when Rogue is going back over what happened between her and Magneto and kind of filling gaps of that storyline, we see her when she was part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Straight out of that episode of the X-Men. Perfect. When she meets Magneto, it's implied by their clothes and the surroundings that they're in the Savage Land.
Mm.
That is never spoken.
No.
But we do know from the original that Magneto had a base in the Savage Land for an unsaid amount of time where he was coming up with his own creations, kind of Mr. Sinister style, before Mr. Sinister kicked him out of the Savage Land.
I think the problem I'm having is I don't have time to go back and rewatch the original series, and it's been 20 years since I saw the original series. Yeah. So to me, as a fan, it's like...
See, that's what I like about it, is that it's so authentic to the original series. It makes it more of a fan letter to be like, yeah, we're doing this whole fucking thing, and we're not going to hold your hand or explain who these characters are.
I do appreciate that.
You kind of just have to strap in and take it as it comes, and we're not going to go into why Banshee and Moira McTaggart or any of this other nonsense, because that is all in the show. If you want to go back and find out, that's all there.
Yeah, I got to find time to go rewatch it.
But, like, I mean, like, I get it, though. I get that. That is a very real complaint that people can 20
years is a long time.
It's a long time, and it's a lot of canon. But I think that, at the very least, it's not detrimental to being able to watch
the show. No, I still enjoyed it.
Exactly. You still enjoyed it. Absolutely. You can still watch it and know what's going on. But if you do know all the backstory stuff, when Sunspot brings up Asteroid M, you're like, yeah, what about Asteroid M?
Yeah.
But what about when that happened? Because that fucking happened, and we're just going to ignore that? That's just not going to be a thing that we're going to talk about ever again? What the fuck is this shit? I really like this show. I really want it to stay as good as it is. I think this is probably the best Marvel animated feature we've seen while, as far as TV goes.
Quite a long time.
I do still feel like the animation is not quite... I don't want to say consistent, but there's just something about it that looks a little off every once in a while. I don't know if it's different houses or having to rush through stuff or what. But I do think that this show is a very good continuation, and I like that it's more adult, that they can say hell now. So you can have the Hellfire Club instead of calling it the Inner Circle. And you have all the drama with the X-Men and with everything happening with Gambit and Rogue. And it's a more adult interpretation of a really good show that at its core was a show about tolerance. Yeah. And that is still what this show is about. That whole thing that Magneto has where he's like, you can look at me as a monster and that's fine. And I understand that. But what I'm trying to achieve is just the chance for my people to live on this planet. And you will not give that to us. Mm-hmm. And you don't even, and Beast has the same thing later on after what happens on the show when he's talking to the reporter and he's like, the fuck are we doing here,
that
Tracy?
That was a great scene. I wish I had brought that up. That scene with him where he's talking to her and he loses his shit. It's like, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
He's like, you're the most grounded of the X-Men and you fucking are losing it. You're like, what the fuck's the point?
What are we
Magneto
fucking doing?
Was right.
What are we fucking doing?
Yeah.
What's the fucking point of any of this?
Oh,
you keep
so
on
good.
Saying one thing and then allowing this shit to happen. And we try so hard and we do it all the time. And you still just won't acknowledge the problem.
Yeah.
And I love that tone is still in the show and has the same weight and meaning that it had in the original. Because that's really what the original was about. Mm-hmm. It was about tolerance and the idea of we all live on this planet together.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to share it. We should not be working to all ends to kill each other. We should be trying to save it. We have not only the capability, we have incredible gifts that would make it so we can save the planet if we would just fucking stop fighting with each other.
That's kind of what Scott said after his interview.
Yeah.
When he gets up and says, you'd all be fucking dead
if it wasn't
for us.
You don't get it and you don't want to get it.
And in the reality, it's true too. In the reality, you have these beings with these powers that could easily kill every human on the planet. They just decide not to.
Oh, we see it. In the Ultimate Comics, Magneto at one point changes the rotation of the Earth via changing its polarity.
Yep.
And it creates a giant wave that knocks out all of New York City and kills over half of the superheroes that were established in the canon.
Mm-hmm.
And it forever changes, like in game, it forever changes the tone of that entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
The one I always go back to is that J. Jonah Jameson, after that moment, thinks Spider-Man is a genuine hero. That's how big a deal it is.
Speaking of that, quick side note, I give movie J. Jonah Jameson,
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons credit. Supposedly, he fought hard for when he was in the
Spider-Man.
He
didn't want to be bald.
He wanted the flat top.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I love you because
you knew
how important that
was
to the character. Yes.
You get it. You know.
Because that is still, that original J. Jonah Jameson is one of the best comic to kind of live action transition. He was so perfect in every way.
That moment where he is lamenting that Spider-Man is gone.
Yes.
And he's talking to Robbie and he's like, man, he's really going up. And I don't want to say it, but like maybe Spider-Man was good because like he was doing this and he was doing this and he is a thief in the costume. And it's like, that's Jay.
It was so perfect.
That's Big Triple
J. So I
got
to give a lot of shout out to J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree.
But yeah, so X-Men 97 is the next episode comes out.
That is Wednesday.
Yeah, okay, so the next episode is first. We'll have to talk about that next week. Yeah. And next week we are going to have to push. We were going to, if we had time, talk about Late Night with the Devil, which we have both watched. We will bring that up next week.
I'm going to rewatch it now.
Yeah,
a me little, as well. A little preview of coming attractions. Mm. I'm going to rewatch that shit.
Yeah. Because it's you're in for a good review.
There is,
And for those who have not seen it, look it up. It is, you can get it.
It's
on
actually
demand
relatively
now.
Cheap.
It's like $14.99 or something.
$14.99 on most retailers. It's an IFC film.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say about it is that I have never seen almost 2 minutes of studio credits
yes!
at the beginning
There's
of
so
a movie
many
before,
of them!
Where I was just sitting there like, how is it still going?
So you realize how hard it was to get this movie made.
How many people it took to get this movie even to a point of distribution. It was just so funny.
So good.
I've never had that moment where I actually paused the movie to check how long we had been spending on just studio credits. But that has nothing to do with the movie itself. The movie itself is fucking great.
Yes.
And we're just going to leave it at that.
Yes, we're going to leave it at that because, you know, we have a good track record now with these horror movies that no one talked about because the last one was The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which was fucking amazing.
Also starring
and now we're going to... Yeah.
David Dismalion.
Thank you so much. So, yeah, look forward to that next week. We will also talk about the latest episode of X-Men 97 and we'll have to decide...
We'll have some
There's got to be something else. There's a million things.
There's other crumbs in the pantry.
There's a ton of things. And then, you know, I have to actually start watching the Avatar show because that is my next. I have caught up on everything, so that I can binge.
I have my review of the Avatar show so far was I finished episode one. I was like, that's really fun. I like this. I think this is going really well. And then I watched episode two. I was like, ah, shit.
Great. M. Night Shyamalan returns.
Ah, fuck.
All right, folks. That has been episode 137. It is in the books. We hope you enjoyed everything you listened to. Once again, you can look us up on YouTube. You can look us up at nerdpodgen.com. It has links to everything, pretty much. Talk about our awesome sound and logo.
Our logo was made by Courtney Howell. Our theme song was made by Brendan Williams and James Connolly.
And they're both fantastic.
And they're all amazing
And we can't
people.
Thank them enough for what they
they're
did.
They're all incredible artists that continue to propagate further art. You can find me at judsumstudios.work if you want to just go to my place. I like to plug it because that's our entire family website. So
well, there you go.
There's a lot of good Judsum stuff at judsumstudio.work.
And when you go to nerdpodgenerations.com, your Al's picture, there's top one of the three links is to Judsum Studios.
Yes.
And then, once again, nerdpodgen.com. Please go on that website. If you send us a message, it goes right to an email address that both of us have access to.
Yep.
So we'll see exactly what you're talking about. So please let us know what you think because we want to keep building this son of a bitch.
We like building this thing out like a dad building out his condo.
Yes. Thank you so much. Well, we hope you have a great rest of your week,
everyone.
Yeah,
have a great week, friends and enemies.